It sounds impossible. I'm sure it sounds uncomfortable to people's ears. But it is absolutely and irrefutably true. Islam was conceived as, became, remains, and is thoroughly documented as a crime syndicate. It inspires, it condones, and it perpetuates all manner of fraud, false witness, theft, and sexual abuse, including sexual discrimination, adolescent genital mutilation, pedophilia, and rape. It sponsors terrorism for the purposes of conquest and control, as well as robbery. It routinely deploys and condones armed robbery, kidnapping, and the slave trade, as well as forced prostitution, as its principal means of financing itself. It subjugates, humiliates, and taxes or murders all who do not capitulate. Once part of the syndicate, death becomes the only way out. As a result of these irrefutable facts, the only sane, the only moral, the only compassionate, the only rational conclusion is that Islam must be declared illegal. It needs to be banned and isolated. Now, during our last segment, IQ made the point, and he is correct, in stating that if my book, Prophet of Doom, was read by those in prominent positions in the media and in politics and in the judicial system of this country and of Western Europe, and the truth was made known about the perverted nature of Muhammad and the corrupt nature of his Quran, that Islam would not exist in those countries. And that Islam would only exist in countries where free speech is illegal. And all we would have to do at that point is to quarantine those countries. And by quarantining them, it means that you don't allow the Muslims to travel out of those countries into your country. And number two, you do not enrich them so that they can import terrorism. And number three, you stop selling them weapons. Now, that would cost America $100 billion a year in weapons sales. But we're selling weapons to a crime syndicate. That should be considered a crime. It is murderous. Even today, the United States is announcing that it is sending 500 more U.S. troops, and in some places I've read as many as 5,000 U.S. troops, to train what they call moderate Syrian rebels. There is no such thing as a moderate Muslim. There is no such thing as a peaceful rebel. Those holding guns in Syria are universally part of the great jihad. They are there to eradicate Shia Islam so that Islam can be united as Sunni Islam. Not one of them is moderate. And there is no such thing as a moderate militant. Even the concept of it is so ludicrous. It's amazing that it received enough votes to pass the Congress and the Senate of the United States. It's amazing that it can be reported in the media without everybody just laughing as they read these articles. We are not only providing weapons to Muslims to the tune of $100 billion a year, we're training them on how to use them. And when you put weapons and training in the hands of those whose dogma is as vicious, as deadly, as merciless as Islam, you're aiding and abetting mass murder. The United States is now aiding and abetting the capture, kidnapping, and forced prostitution of little girls. We are on the side of evil. It is sad in many ways, one of which is that the truth is so easily known. The truth is so irrefutable. The history of Islam has been consistent. It has not varied. The words and deeds of Muhammad are as they have always been. They're not hidden. They're available to anyone who wishes to read them, to know them. And they are not confusing. They're not difficult to interpret. It's pretty hard to misinterpret the first act of Islam during the Islamic era, which is an armed raid, armed robbery against a civilian caravan, where Muhammad justifies it with the eighth surah of the Quran, not only telling his followers, the jihadists, that it was okay to kidnap and ransom some of the civilians as part of the raid, but that imprisoning them and kidnapping them was not acceptable until these Muslims made a great slaughter. That's what the Quran says. So that the civilians that were walking along with the caravan, that most of them had to be murdered as well as robbed. And until the murder took place, it was not acceptable for the Muslims to kidnap the survivors of their attack. That's what the Quran says. The Quran actually says that stealing their property is lawful and good. And it tells Muslims that they are to follow this example and to terrorize the world using all manner of weapons, continuing to fight and to kill all of those who do not surrender to Islam until Islam is the only religion the world over. And yet the United States, as well as many countries throughout Europe, are arming the religion, are selling the religion hundreds of billions of dollars worth of the most sophisticated weapons, and are actually training the belligerents. You know, if Islam was quarantined and Muslims could only fight and kill Muslims, while tragic, it would not affect the rest of the world. You know, there is no hope in Islam if they foreshorten the lives of fellow Muslims because one group versus another wants power, wants what the others have. Well, that's one thing. But it's when they export their terrorism, when they start attacking Israel, the United States, and France, and Belgium, and the United Kingdom, that we ought to care. And that we ought to dissuade them from doing so by being honest, openly, honestly, totally, uncompromisingly exposing and condemning Islam. But yet we're doing the exact opposite. Dateline Washington, the FBI director, James Comey, sharply criticized the New York Times on Thursday for anonymously quoting a member of a terrorist group in an article about the attacks in Paris last week. So the newspaper, which was dishonest in terms of reporting what actually occurred during the attack, they in an initial article acknowledged that a woman who survived was told that she needed to read the Quran, convert to Islam, and then wear the Islamic burqa or be to avoid being killed, and that they reported that accurately in their first edition and then was edited out in the second edition of that same, by the same newspaper. They have contacts that they use that are part of AQAP, Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula, whereby they specifically have provided insights into why these kind of attacks occur. And so what the New York Times reported was that AQAP, while they're claiming the attack, they're not claiming the attack in the sense that it's being reported, where that Al-Qaeda claims credit for the attack. That's not what they're really doing. They're saying that they support the attack. They say that one of the attackers was known to them. They said the other attacker was known to the Islamic State, but that neither AQLP or the Islamic State participated in the planning of the attack nor coordinated any aspect of the attack. That's what the New York Times reported. Now, that information is vital for people to know. That AQAP, Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula, which is no affiliation of the Al-Qaeda of bin Laden, none, that organization, while celebrating the attack, said that they played no role in coordinating it, and that they recognized that the other participant, the Islamic State participant, was not guided by the Islamic State, although the Islamic State celebrated the attack. And that the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula did not communicate together. Now, that goes against, of course, what the FBI wants to promote as propaganda. That this was either the Islamic State or Al-Qaeda or both or one and the same. The truth does not serve the lie. And so the director of the FBI had a conniption fit with the newspaper quoting the source that clarified what actually occurred. That's a long way for an FBI director to go. The article, this says, which ran on the front page on Thursday, quoted a member of AQAP. Now, Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula has no affiliation of any kind with the Al-Qaeda of the CIA, the Al-Qaeda of the Jimmy Carter, Zygmunt Brzezinski administration, the Al-Qaeda of bin Laden. They did not communicate. There was an attempt by bin Laden to, in writing, to disassociate from them. So, that's something we need to keep in mind. The article, as I said, which ran on the front page Thursday, quoted a member of Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula, which shares the name Al-Qaeda only for the purpose of directing traffic to its website. The nature, for those of you who don't have a website or don't spend a lot of time in that realm, it's extremely inexpensive to build and maintain a website. What is expensive is directing people to it. That's the reason why companies like Amazon had to raise $1 billion to launch their brand, because you need to spend ungodly amounts of advertising to direct people to your site. Otherwise, you have whatever it is that you're trying to promote out there, but no one has access to it. That's why I did 3,000 hours of talk radio interviews to make people aware of Prophet of Doom. It is an extremely expensive and time-consuming undertaking. The reason that Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula chose that name for what is essentially a website, and that's the Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula exists as a website. The reason they chose that name is because the United States chose to describe its enemy that it was at war against as Al-Qaeda rather than Islam. So Al-Qaeda became extraordinarily well-known, and everyone in the world was aware of the name. So if you Google Al-Qaeda, it will direct people to Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula and their website. So they got all of the benefit of the notoriety of Al-Qaeda, which is why they chose the name. They have no affinity with the Al-Qaeda organization at all, and it is essentially a website. Anyway, they quoted a member of Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula who addressed the timing of the attacks. The Al-Qaeda member said that although the operations were executed by one man who had ties to the Al-Qaeda group, and the ties were loose, he spent a month there in Yemen, and another who had ties to the Islamic State. We don't know if that individual actually engaged in the Great Jihad in Syria or not. The coordination was a result of their friendship, not of common planning between the groups. So the coordination was a result of their friendship, these two Muslims who perpetrated the mass killing, and not of common planning between the groups. Quote, your decision to grant, this is from the FBI director, James Comey. Quote, your decision to grant anonymity to a spokesperson for Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula so he could clarify the role of his group in assassinating innocents, including a wounding of a police officer, to distinguish it from the assassination of other innocents in Paris in the name of another group of terrorists, is both mystifying and disgusting, Mr. Comey said in the letter to the Times. Well, I'll tell you what's disgusting and mystifying is the FBI and Mr. Comey. And it is. To this idea that you want to, he wants to blame Al-Qaeda for the attack, and the information from Al-Qaeda that says, no, we didn't coordinate the attack. We're celebrating it. We think it was swell. But, you know, we wish we could, but we didn't coordinate the attack. That is mystifying and disgusting. That it's okay for the United States to wrongly blame Al-Qaeda as opposed to Islam. But when it's the relationship between the two perpetrators that explains the coordination, how the event was planned, as opposed to the myth that Al-Qaeda coordinated it and planned it, that's mystifying and disgusting. The truth is mystifying and disgusting. Accuracy, mystifying and disgusting to the FBI. Now, how safe are you in America when the head of the FBI views the testimony of somebody who has firsthand access to information regarding murder, that the testimony of such an individual is now mystifying and disgusting? And he's not saying, no, listen, if he were saying that Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula's celebration of the murder was mystifying and disgusting, he would just show his ignorance of Islam. That it's not mystifying, it is disgusting. That would be one thing, but he's not. He's attacking the New York Times. He's saying that the New York Times, by citing a witness with valuable insight that contradicts the FBI's account, is mystifying and disgusting. It's the reporter. It's the Times itself that the FBI wants to present as mystifying and disgusting. Not the FBI for lying. Not the FBI for failing to do its job. Not Islam. But the reporters, the journalists, the New York Times itself. That's how far we have fallen. Shame on us. We'll be back. Think about this, folks. The FBI director went to published an open letter to the New York Times, calling the New York Times disgusting, calling the New York Times mystifying. It's astonishing to me that, first of all, that the director of the FBI would engage in condemning the most reputable newspaper in the United States. I mean, well, there's a lot that the New York Times does that is disreputable. For example, their presentation of what occurred that day. They deliberately, knowingly changed the references by the murderers to Islam, and they took them out of their article and misrepresented them to disassociate the murder from Islam. That is disgusting. That is mystifying. It is reprehensible. But for the FBI director to say that getting a quote that clarifies the role that Al-Qaeda actually did not play in the event, tell me, how in the world is that mystifying? Here's an organization that is celebrating the attack, as are Muslims around the world celebrating the attack. And because they celebrate the attack, and because one of the perpetrators spends a month in their company, they are being now blamed for the attack, when in fact the spokesperson from Al-Qaeda, the Arabian Peninsula, says, no, the two guys were friends, and they coordinated the attack. We didn't coordinate it. It wasn't coordinated with the Islamic State, and we didn't coordinate together Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. So he's providing you information that is extraordinarily valuable. It confirms exactly what I said last week, that this was simply another example of Islam poisoning an individual so that they act in a murderous way, that this has absolutely no association of any kind with Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State, that these Muslims did this because Islam turned them in to murderers. That was the only informed and rational conclusion that could be drawn from the facts. The CIA director doesn't want that known. He won't say that, won't admit it, won't acknowledge it. And so when the truth is published, he calls the truth, and the carrier, the communicator of that truth, mystifying and disgusting. Now, he didn't call the New York Times mystifying and disgusting for misrepresenting the statement of the woman that survived when they quoted her correctly in their first edition and their second edition, which actually went to press, you know, the online versus the printed version, changed it and changed everything that she said. Now, that would be mystifying and disgusting. Comley added, I fear that you have lost your way and urge you to reconsider allowing your newspaper to be used by those who have murdered so many and work every day to murder more. Realization is they didn't murder many. That's the whole deal here, is this idea that Al-Qaeda is the murderer and the inspiration for murder is the very lie that the FBI is trying to promote. It isn't true. Al-Qaeda is not the perpetrator of murder. They don't murder many, and they don't work every day to murder more. The murderous institution is, was, and continues to be Islam. And so here, when there is a clear demarcation of evidence that shows that Al-Qaeda did not plan this attack. And if they did, man, they would wallow in it. He's saying that they have lost their way because they're not parroting the propaganda of America, of this administration, that disassociates Islam from the terror that it inspires. The organization that has lost their way and is now used by the murderers is the FBI, the CIA. Politicians on both sides of the aisle in America, they're the ones that have lost their way. They're the ones who enable the murderers because they have disassociated the lone impetus for mass murder, for terrorism worldwide, from the acts that it is perpetrating. Mr. Comley should be looking in a mirror when he makes these statements. The article did not say why the Times did not name the individual who communicates with news organizations through a mobile messaging application. Michael Slackman, the international managing editor of the New York Times, defended the decision to use anonymity. Why not? If you had given a name, what good would the name be? Do you know that there isn't any of these Muslims who are engaged in jihad on a global scale who use their actual names. They all change their names. So what? And their names are all similar. It's this fixation with names and wanting to pin a blame on an individual as opposed to the religion that lies at the very heart of what the FBI and politics and indeed the media are doing wrong. You know, this is not about bin Laden. This is not about al-Baghdadi. This is not about al-Alawi, the founder of AQAP, two of which are dead. This is about Muhammad. If you want to know the spokesperson, it was Muhammad. And so, the man's name is irrelevant. The international managing editor for the New York Times said the individual quoted anonymously has for several weeks provided accurate insight and information into the thinking and actions of AQLP, Mr. Slackman said. The material was greatly, generally central to the news. In one case, nothing that Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State, in the case that noting that Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State had not planned the attacks in Paris. Yeah, it's germane, absolutely. The person could clearly communicate what the aims were, what the involvement was of the Islamic State or Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, because it's an exceedingly small organization. It's the one, of course, being blamed now for being the greatest threat to the world, based partly upon the false link to the killings in Paris. But the fact is, it's an extremely small group of people. Maybe at its peak, 200, down considerably from that now. It has no influence. It is tiny, and to the best of my knowledge, it has not perpetrated any attack outside of Yemen. Now, it communicated with Hassan, but Hassan had decided to and carried out his attack on his own. That attack was not planned at Fort Hood by AQLP. It was Hassan as a Muslim doing what Muslims do. The only attack that you could say was actually coordinated and planned by the Islamic State outside of this is the Islamic State, or not the Islamic State, but Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula, outside of Yemen, was the underwear bomber. You know, the guy that tried to set his britches on fire, thinking that he would somehow blow up an airplane. I mean, first of all he did was burn his privates. But even if he had ignited his underwear, it killed him maybe, but it most certainly would not have brought down the airplane. So there's a failed attack, not by the fact that he was caught, not by the fact that the police did anything, just by the fact that the device was inappropriate and the device didn't work, was the only attack actually planned by AQLP, and that was planned back at the time when the founder of AQLP, an American citizen, was still alive. He was subsequently murdered by America. So, that is the reality that the media does not want you to know. They want to put a name on all of this. Now, the problem, even with names on all of this, is other than Ibrahim al-Baghdadi, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, they're really, and there's not even an image of him that is such a shadowy figure, that there's really no one anymore to say, pin the tail on that donkey. These are just Muslims run amok. You kill one and another takes his place. It is the very thing the FBI is trying to do, which is to create a most wanted list of terrorist perpetrators so they can go after an individual as opposed to the religion that inspires them, was thwarted by the truth. And that's why the director of the FBI had a conniption fit. I mentioned this earlier, but Pakistani police are clashing with large crowds protesting the image of the, it says, Prophet Muhammad, capital P, Muhammad was not a prophet, published in the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo. The authorities used tear gas and water cannons to disperse the demonstration near the French consulate in Karachi. So, not only are they showing, as the Pakistan, land of the pure Muslims, that this killing was something that they were condoning. As a matter of fact, it says death to the blasphemers. So, rather than condemning the murderers of the magazine cartoonists, rather than condemning the murderers, they were condemning those who were murdered. And beyond the fact that that tells you how messed up Islam is, you also need to recognize that these were massive demonstrations in Pakistan perpetrated by the clerics, religious clerics in Pakistan, of mainstream Islam telling the world that the crime was depicting Muhammad, not killing those that depicted him. Now, that's pretty tough to separate that from Islam or to associate it with AQAP. So the authorities in Pakistan used tear gas and water cannons to disperse the demonstration in Karachi that was outside the French consulate. That's the other thing that I wanted to mention. Not only do you have Muslims enraged, shouting, you know, angry, holding up signs that, you know, death to the blasphemers, as opposed to their anger that Muslims murdered innocent people. But they're protesting against the French embassy, as if our French consulate in Karachi, as if the French had something to do with the satirical magazine. The fact is, the magazine was as likely to impugn the French government as they were to impugn Islam. And that's the bottom line here. By the way, speaking of the magazine, you know, their most recent million copy magazine that picking Muhammad again, saying, I am Charlie. It's just stupid. Just stupid. I mean, I'm sorry the guys were killed, but it's just stupid. One of the things that bothers me the most is when people do lash out, but they do so ignorantly. And Charlie Hebdo did. The only reason Charlie Hebdo published the cartoons was to be provocative and to show they would not be intimidated. But there wasn't any realization that Muhammad was a sexual pervert. There wasn't any realization that Muhammad himself was a mass murderer. There was no realization that Muhammad would never identify with Charlie Hebdo, that he would never say, I am Charlie, because Muhammad himself ordered every poet, which was the media of his day in the illiterate world of Central Arabia, every poet who exposed him, who ridiculed him, murdered. So Muhammad is never going to do that, ever. And the whole Muslim fear of phobia of showing an image of Muhammad. First of all, you can't show an image of Muhammad. No one knows what he looks like. There are no artist renderings of Muhammad that were drawn and have been conveyed to us today from the 7th century. Not one. There's not a single portrait, picture, illustration of Muhammad that was drawn at the time that Muhammad was alive that somebody who knew what he looked like could describe him, could paint him, could draw him. So no one knows what Muhammad looks like. No one. We don't know how tall he was. We don't know if he was a squirrely little weaselly guy. We don't know if he was ugly as sin. No one knows what the man looked like. So you cannot draw a picture of Muhammad. You can't attribute the status of prophet to Muhammad because he wasn't a prophet. And so what's the issue? I mean, other than to say this cartoon represents Muhammad, you can't draw him. You can't depict him. But their fear, their phobia of doing so really revolves around the notion that it's Muhammad and Allah are inseparable, so by rendering Muhammad, you are rendering the Islamic God. And by quantifying anything associated with Muhammad, who is Allah, all you do is you open Islam up to ridicule, because Muhammad, who was Allah, was reprehensible, stupid, moronic, murderous, deceitful, destructive, demented, perverted. And so any attempt to convey Muhammad, and therefore Allah, and therefore Islam, is renounced, is seen as blasphemy, is seen as a deadly offense because it is deadly to the religion. That's their fear. You know, I heard a radio talk show, so I think it was Heathcock down out of San Diego that I did his show once, probably the dumbest, most disgusting radio talk show host that I interviewed with in all of those 3,000 interviews. And he was purporting to be an expert on Islam, that he had done his research, and that he said that the reason that Islam came to exist is that Muhammad thought that Christians were being idolatrous by elevating Jesus to the status of God, and that was idolatrous, and that Islam was created to fight the idolatry of Jesus being elevated to the status of God, and therefore depicting an image of a man is highly offensive to Muslims because that's the basis of the founding of Islam. And he said, I've done some research, and this is the truth. Nothing could be further from the truth. It is as if the man lied deliberately.